Gary Steingart is on with us. That's pretty exciting. He's got a new book. Yes. You know Gary Steingart? Are you a Steingart? Who went woo? Oh, hi. Do you know the Steingarts?
I don't know that, but I really like some of his books.
Some of his books, not all of them? You love one of his books, but he has like several. Okay, we'll talk about that too. The new one is a memoir, Little Failure, Gary Steingart, author, of course, super sad true love story. He's on the line with us right now from New York. Hi, Gary, how are you this morning?
Hi. Very good, thank you. Good to be here.
Oh, nice to talk to you. How do you usually spend your Saturday mornings at this point?
In a stupor.
In a stupor? That's from Friday night, though, right?
That's from life?
Yeah. So it's true about Russians and drinking, then, huh? Can we agree on that much?
We can agree on that much. Yeah. Cheers.
But what I don't understand, is it true of Russian Jews as well? Because, I mean, Jewish people here have trouble drinking.
Yes. I've been actually asked to appear at Jewish community centers to help Jews drink more.
How's that working out so far?
It's an uphill battle, but I try.
So a memoir, and you started this at age 38. Is it too soon to do a memoir when you're not even 40?
Well, I'm 41 as we speak, yeah. And 41 is 73 in Russian years. So.
Just looking at longevity.
I don't got
here.
Much left. Yeah, not a lot of life there.
Yeah. Actually, there was a thing in the Times as well, saying Russians, the people behind them. No, that's not it. Yeah, Russians, the people behind the power. No, that's not from that. Probability that a Russian man will die before he turns 55 is 25%, they said here.
Yeah. Looking good.
Yeah, it's looking good. And is that, and they say here, they imply here that it is all the vodka, but is that, it's probably other drinks as well, wouldn't you think?
Well, yes. We also enjoy heart disease, suicide, accidental death. Choking on a mongoose, that's how one of my relatives died.
Choking on a mongoose?
Yeah, after being drunk, yeah.
He got so drunk he tried to eat a mongoose?
That's right.
Okay. So there's history in the Steingart family, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's always choking on a mongoose or driving off the road or eating one stick of butter too many at breakfast.
Oh, God. But just to clear things up, Jonathan Franzen is not your psychiatrist, and James Franco is not your wife.
You're talking about that video, yes. Yeah. kissing James Franco was the high point of my career.
Yeah, and his too, I'm sure.
Yeah. When he kissed Seth Rogen the next week, a part of me died.
Yeah. Which part was that?
The important part.
That was a good idea. Was it your suggestion to get James Franco for that? That was a little video promoting the memoir.
Yes, it was my idea. He was a former student of mine at Columbia.
He was?
Yes, he was. And there's a lot of kissing going on that campus, so we decided to continue the tradition on film.
Yeah, I remember you guys got to look. It's on our web. We put it up on our Facebook if you want to see that and see what we're talking about there. So what about these Cossacks whipping Pussy Riot with horse whips? Is that from Russia today or what?
Why does everything in Russia always end with Cossacks whipping Pussy Riot?
I know. It's a cliche.
It's been going on for three centuries in a way, yeah.
I know. It's a cliche.
Move on.
I know, yeah. Move on. It was, you know, when they said the Olympics, the security would be handled by the Cossacks, I thought that was a great move right there. That was reassuring. If you've never had them ride through your homeland, I think it's a good feeling.
Oh, yeah. Many of my ancestors got to know the Cossacks intimately.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I think a large part... Well, my dad was born in Kiev, but left when he was 1 year old, so that's a lot of foresight right there. You know.
That's a lot of foresight. He had the foreskin to move, yeah.
Yeah. That, too.
I mean, the foresight, sorry.
Yes, same thing.
Foresight, foreskin.
But were you... In terms of going back to Russia, and I know you have like several times in this book as well, which is a very moving part of the book, but are you actually labeled a pathological Russophobe?
Yes. There's a gentleman on the internet who has this website devoted to pathological Russophobes. Hillary Clinton has made the list. John Kerry made the list. And this year, I've been inducted into the Hall of Fame as a pathological Russophobe.
Yeah.
So that's like a Nobel Prize to me.
Yeah. So, but it'd be like being afraid or distrustful of yourself, then.
Yes. Yeah. I can't even look at myself in the shower. It's too frightening.
Yeah. What was that like, though, going back, for the first time went back to to Leningrad and find it was St. Petersburg? First of all, it must have been a shock.
Yeah, I still think that St. Petersburg is somewhere in Florida. I call it Leningrad. it was interesting. You know, I came back in the 90s when the country was falling apart economically, and it was, you know, you leave a middle-class country, and then you come back, and it's just completely destroyed. So it was fun.
Yeah. And I know the moving part of the book really is that the chapter where you go back there with your parents and kind of reestablish, particularly your tie with your father and learn about what happened there. But that must have been unbelievably moving for you.
I go back. I've been back almost every year in the last decade, just because I need to feel more depressed. You know, life in the States is a little too easy. But finding out about my parents' history made me even more depressed. And I realized that, you know, they moved to this country and they left Russia, but Russia never left them. Mm-hmm. And that's what it means to have immigrant parents, I guess.
Yeah. And what about Russian parenting? Is it just hit the boy? Is that in some?
There's a lot of punching and ducking and swinging and, you know, and then having nicknames like Little Failure, which was my nickname, which is the title of the book. So, you know,
and that was fun. That was from your mother, right? Little Failure.
Yes. My mom called me Little Failure. After I graduated Oberlin College, which is a small Marxist-Leninist college in Ohio. My parents thought I would go to law school after that, but I sort of came out to my mother and said, look, I'm going to be a writer. And she looked around the 100-square-foot apartment I was living with this life-size water bug and said, you, my friend, are a little failure. And I guess it stuck.
But she couldn't have really felt that way. I mean, this is what I don't understand about Russian parenting. Your mother was undermining you constantly. Your dad was also and hitting you in the neck, but that was all love, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's just a different way to love someone.
I guess,
you know,
with contact.
With contact and insult is how you raise a child.
Yeah.
I'm shocked by American parenting without any of this stuff. What are you guys doing? Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you keep your hands to yourself? Oof.
Yeah. Is it the kind of thing you miss after a while when no one's hitting you in the neck?
Yeah, I wish somebody would come up to me on the streets of Manhattan and just hit me already. I look so punchable, and yet everyone just refrains.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's amazing. And what can we say? I don't know. I don't want to ruin this book if people haven't gotten it yet. Can we say about the revelation from your father when you went back to?
Well, yeah, I don't want to ruin it for people, but it did explain a lot of the way I was brought up.
Yeah.
I still learned a lot. You know, I learned that my father, growing up, spent part of his 20s in a mental asylum, and that you know, that explains a lot too. So.
Yeah, yeah. But you're saying that actually learning that did not sort of free you from some of this. It actually made things worse for you psychologically, or you're more.
No. You know, unlike most New Yorkers, I don't go see a shrink 5 times a week. You know, I only go 4 times a week. So
yeah.
I've only been doing it for 12 years. I feel like I'm better now.
Good. okay, I guess we're there. I read someplace that you were at the point of you're getting so much better from the therapy that you're about done with it. You had like one or two more sessions left, and you were cured or whatever that's saying would be.
One or two more sessions, and we switched to yoga completely.
Yeah. That's good. And this, in terms of the memoir and stuff, you were sort of forced to go to a therapist, right, by your friend John?
Yes. I had a friend who said, you know, if you still want to be my friend, you have to seek help. And that's a lovely thing to say, I think, you know.
Yeah.
I wish more people would say that to each other.
Yeah. Those letters he wrote, I mean, that letter, the one that's printed in there, the letter that he wrote to you was pretty devastating character assessment. And
When I was in my early 20s, I think I was a world-class jerk. As many people in their early 20s are. I think that's a wonderful time for it.
Yeah. But you're particularly good at it, I guess.
I was the best. I was the best jerk. I won awards from, the National Jewish Jerk Council.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
What forms would this sort of behavior take, besides the drunken form? But, I mean, what would you do to earn this accolade?
Well, my friend, who was an older writer, and he was very much trying to help me edit and finish and publish my first novel, and I repaid him by just insulting him all the time and calling him a TV writer, which is what he was. Little did I know that TV writing would be the most important form of writing in, 2000,
Are you still there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. We lost you there for a second. Were you taking a call?
Sorry. I got stuff to do. It's Sunday morning.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, no, it's Saturday, I think, isn't it?
Oh, is it really? This stupor is not letting go. It's getting worse.
Yeah. Okay, where were we? And so he told you all this, and he said he would loan you a certain amount of money to be repaid very precisely with interest tied to T-bills.
Yes. So I got a grant to go into psychotherapy.
Yeah.
That's a very Manhattan maneuver, the psychotherapy grant.
That's great. Okay, and so, all right, we're getting somewhere now. I feel like we're really getting somewhere now. Your Wikipedia page, by the way, is thin. It's light.
Light, yeah.
Yeah, it needs... Yeah. Mine is bigger than yours, and I've done nothing in my life.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah.
That really makes me sad.
Yeah. And plus, did you know that it's flagged for undisclosed paid editing?
You mean I can make my own Wikipedia page?
I think you can.
Oh, my God, I'm going to call my publisher tomorrow and get going.
Yeah. Okay, I'll get on that because it really...
Is there at least a picture of me on there looking appropriately in her suits?
you know what strikes me too in reading the memoir is that all your books are actually are memoirs. Or at least the ones I read, like Super Sad True Love Story seems to be pretty much your life. It's sort of science fictionized in a dystopia and all that sort of thing, but that's pretty much what you live in, right?
Yes, my sort of dirty secret is that I have absolutely no imagination and have to just end up writing about myself all the time.
Yeah, but how you do it is really quite amazing. I mean, the forcefulness of your writing is just about unique. I think your style is like a unique style. How did you develop the forceful way in which you write? I mean, it's forceful and it's really quite powerful.
Well, when I came to America, it was 1980, the sort of Ronald Reagan evil empire era, and being a Russian kid was the worst thing imaginable.
Sure.
There were all those movies, Red Dawn, Red Gerbil, Red Hamster, and so the kids in Hebrew school would really make fun of me all the time, and I had a terrible accent, and I always wore this giant fur hat from Russia. So writing was my defense. You don't have an accent when you write, so I would write all these things. Like I would, for example, write a version of the Torah called the Gemara, where with Exodus became Sexodus, and Brooke Shields became the sort of the progenitor of the Jewish people. And that made me my first American friend, Brooke Shields.
Yeah.
And so after that, satire became a kind of mode for the rest of my life, because it was a way to communicate with people.
Right. And it's a way of dealing with some pretty important issues without dealing with them straight on.
Right, right. And I think this memoir is sort of the first attempt at writing without the kind of just safety net of pure humor that the other books have.
So. Yeah. How hard was that then?
It was very hard. Oh, my God. Don't try this at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very tough to write because humor's always been a friend of mine. And, I mean, the book is still, I hope, somewhat funny, but it's not as uniquely focused on humor as the other books.
Yeah. Is there kind of a club or whatever, an understanding of among immigrant writers? I mean, people write about the same sense, coming from different places, but coming to America and sort of what that reflects back on where they came from. Are there a group of you that hang around and drink?
Yes, it's true. There's a group of sort of young, very furry male immigrant writers that hang out together. I'm the Russian. We have two Indians. We have an Austrian, and we have somebody who's really from a different country. He's from Texas.
How does he get along with the others? Pretty well?
Not well. But boy, can he barbecue.
Yeah. And the experiences are also different, but are there similarities in what they've found in coming to America, or is it, through the lens of America, does it make some things clearer about their origins, or how does that work?
Well, you know, I'll give you an example. My friend and my former mentor, Chang Rae Lee, the Korean-American author, just published a dystopian novel, and my last novel was dystopian.
Yeah.
So we were being interviewed by New York Magazine, and they asked him why all these immigrants are writing dystopian novels, and he said that any immigrant novel is, in a sense, a dystopian novel, because right. It's about being forced to leave your culture and move to a new culture, and then almost like a species from a different planet trying to adapt.
Yeah, so it's all science fiction of a very of a bad future.
Yeah, we're very good at science fiction.
Yeah. Super Sad is great, by the way. I really love it. It's amazing. And the American Restoration Authority is quite a brilliant idea.
Yeah, we're trying to turn it into a TV series now, so maybe James Franco could play one of the roles.
He could play you, I suppose. Or play Lenny.
He could play Joshy, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, one of those. Together, we'll surprise the world. Well, that's their motto.
That's the slogan,
And they're all carrying these little electronic devices around, these apparatchniks, apparatus.
To research the book, I had to buy an iTelephone.
Did you? An iTelephone?
Yeah.
Have you learned
the latest technology?
Have you learned to use it?
Not yet.
Yeah.
I still like my flip phone.
Yeah. Because our hero in the book is living in this dystopian future, and where he still has books. He has physical books, but people are always telling him that they smell bad.
In the future, people will complain that books smell bad. Yeah. Actually, I've heard some younger people say that about books, that they have a kind of, you know, musty odor.
Yeah.
So I spray all my books with Pine Sol.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy on the plane, Deuter, says, Deuter, your book smells. Yeah. There's so much to talk about here. And the blurbs are another kind of a sidelight of you. You are sort of the king of blurbs. But do you write them just for your friends, or can anyone get a blurb from you?
Literally anyone can get a blurb for their book from me. All I require is that the book have two covers and a spine. And I will blurb it.
You'll blurb it. And, you know, we just had B.J. Novak on the show last week, actually. And
I blurbed him.
He was very proud of your blurb.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
With him, I actually read his book.
You did? And you meant it?
Before blurb. Yeah. It's good. It's a good book.
Yeah, it is good. He said, BJ blew me away. He just keeps kicking short fiction in the rear, making it run ahead, clutching its behind, I will say. And then he runs up and kicks it some more, and the result is one of the most aggressively, insanely awesome debuts in a while. So that's really good stuff. Yeah, he was
good. I love saying, BJ blew me away was one of my favorite sentences.
Yeah. I hear you. Okay. And the other ones are good, too, here. I won't read them all. And actually, there's a film that was... There's now actually a film inspired by your blurbing.
Yes, there's a documentary about my blurbing.
Yeah. Are you at all worried that blurbing is what you'll be known for as a writer and some of these books will just fall by the wayside?
I think that's already happening. People see me more as a blurber and a star of trailers than as an actual writer.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because, you know, who cares about writers anymore? It's all over.
Yeah, it's all over. A disturbing thing about your youth was your innate republicanism. Has that changed at all?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God, yes.
What was it?
I left up Stalin at this point, yeah.
Because didn't you volunteer for George W. and?
I volunteered for George H.W.
H.W., the older one, yeah.
Yes, I was a teenage Republican. And then, somebody mistook me for the waiter at the Victory Party. And the next day, I was a Democrat. I should have been in the Tea Party by now.
Yeah.
Thank God for the intervention.
Yeah. The bipartisan party would be yours, I think.
The bipartisan party. That's the party of Super Sad True Love Story.
Yeah. How do you explain that, though? I mean, a kid comes from the Soviet Union, a little kid grows up, and he's a Republican, innately Republican.
Well, most, I think, immigrants from post-communist countries, the Soviet Union and Cuba, become quite conservative as a response to the place where they came from. I grew up worshiping Lenin. There was a big statue of Lenin outside the window, and I would hug his pedestal every morning. And then when we got to America, you know, I was told no more Lenin. Now we have to worship Ronald Reagan. And it was almost the same thing. It worked out really great.
So it was a seamless transition from communism to republicanism?
Absolutely. The two really are not, you know, they go hand in hand.
Yeah. Okay. Stylistically, at least, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not so much dogma, some of the dogma. All right.
No, not the dogma.
Okay, and then also in the memo, the thing that strikes me is it really turns out to be as much a memoir of your father as it is of yourself, but it's an incomplete because at one point your dad says to you, you really should be writing this about me, right? Because I've had an interesting life.
Yes, he said that. And it's true. I mean, he had a life. I mean, he grew up in the late 30s, early 40s in Russia. So he grew up under Hitler and Stalin. And I mean, he really saw things that I can only imagine. And it's a really tragic story. His father was killed in the war when he was 3 years old. He was almost killed by German bombers. Those were different times. So yeah. my problems about Hebrew school pale in comparison, I guess.
Yeah. It's more dramatic than SSSQ, right?
Yes, at the Solomon Chapter School of Queens.
Yeah.
Where I was sentenced to 8 years of Hebrew school for a crime I didn't commit.
Yeah. Are your parents still alive, both of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very much so.
Excellent. Have they come to terms with you and you with them?
I've come to terms with them. I don't know if they fully come to terms with me.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of stuff I write is very surprising to them because it's just so different from what they believe in every sense that I think their expression is sort of, is this really our kid? You know, did we give birth to this guy?
Well, didn't they start, they disowned you, didn't they, after the first book came out or the Russian?
They did disown me for about 6 hours, but then they found themselves bored.
Yeah. And they came back again. They said, "Don't talk to us again." And what was your thing as a kid? With your mother?
Oh yes, my mother would give me a very long silent treatment up to weeks at a time, and I would say, "If you don't talk to me, it is better not to live."
Better not to live if you don't talk to me. So that was her
better
thing, the silent treatment. But when she says stuff, it's almost worse, right? Because.
I think the silent treatment is the worst form of child punishment imaginable. I prefer getting hit on the neck a lot more.
Yeah. And for a while, they were tracking you on a list of published authors, right?
Yes.
Where you ranked.
Yes. And my father told me, first he said, according to the Russian internet, you will soon be forgotten. And then he said, and according to the American internet, you only rank number 30 on the list of living authors.
Number 30. So,
yeah.
So that was, what, 10, 15 years ago?
It was a couple years ago. A
couple years ago. Have you moved up from 30?
I think I'm down to 78 after this book.
Is it not well received?
No, it was very well received. I'm very happy.
Yeah. You hardly ever get bad reviews anymore. You probably had a few in the beginning, though, right? Because your style was...
This one was my father, yes. Yeah. Bad reviews from the family, but none from published sources yet. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's really... That's something. In terms of stylistics, so I'm still wondering about this. Can you trace your style of writing, your stylistics, to any particular author? I know Chekhov keeps coming up, but I don't know if you're Chekhovian.
I'm not too Chekhovian. Chekhov was a genius, the way he had so much empathy for people. I just have empathy for my dachshund and a couple of other people, but that's it. I think Nabokov, their style, and maybe Philip Roth for the humor combined with, this kind of intense examination of the Jewish family.
Mm-hmm. Nabokov, you know what I loved about all his early German books, novels, and such, and stories.
The one set in Germany, yes.
Yeah, well, when he was living in Germany, I believe, at the time,
yeah.
And wrote all this stuff, and I loved them. And then,
yeah, they're wonderful.
Yeah.
And he was giving lessons in tennis and chess to survive back then.
Yeah.
So, fascinating.
But then he got too smart for me in later years. I could not, because you really have to understand chess and butterfly collections, right, and stuff to know what's going on at all, and I wasn't there.
I can't wait to write in a book of For Dummies or something like that. Really, really catch in.
That'd be a good one. I imagine, though, that you are in the midst of another writing project that you probably can't talk about, right?
No, I want to write a novel set from a woman's point of view entirely. So I've been trying to meet women lately to talk to them and figure out what they're about. So if you're a woman, please write me a letter and just
tell me what
it's like.
What you're all about, and that's going to
be... Yeah.
Okay.
I got to capture that voice, you know.
That voice, yeah. Which, by the way, when you first got your book deal, the whole thing of it was you had a book deal and how excited you would be for that, but I realized finally you could get, you know, you get a woman. You get some action, yeah, at this point.
Yeah. Here I was, the small furry guy nobody would look twice at, and all of a sudden, damn.
Yeah. So that, you know, probably you want to change that in years to come in for biographers, that, you know, that moment, and make it something a little more elevated, don't you think?
I think so. I'm waiting for that book deal to come through.
The next one. Well, A Little Failure is the name of the book. It's a memoir. Gary Steingart, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Great to be there.
Very pleasure talking to you. Okay. Gary Steingart. The book is Little Failure. He's big success now. Get it and read it. Steingart blew me away. Just keeps kicking short fiction in the rear. And there you have it. Okay. Okay. All right. I got a lot of notes here that I've been taking.
Wow.
Get to most of this stuff. I work on this stuff. I want you to know. All right. Have you read Steingart?
No.
I think you would like Steingart.
Really?
You didn't think so, huh, from that? Huh?
Well, it's hard to tell by an interview.
Yeah, I know.
Because I've gone both ways. Like, sometimes I think, oh, that's going to be great, and then I read it, it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
And other times I think, wow, what an idiot, and I read it, it's like, wow, that's really good.
And he tends not to let you get
too close.
So.
Yeah, it's okay.
Though he, but you can read the memoir for that and find out exactly what's going on there. And watch the video with James Franco and him. James Franco is his wife in the video. Wearing a little pink house coat. It's very sweet. Okay. So what then? What's going on?
Well, March 9th, Jazz on a Sunday.
Yeah.
At the Brink Lounge at 3 o'clock. Jeff and I and Brian Ritter are going to do a little concert.
Oh, you're actually working together.
Yeah. Sponsored by the Madison Music Collective.
Far out. When is that?
March 9th. Yeah. You can find out more information at madisonmusiccollective.org.
Okay, so if you're anywhere in the tri-state area.
Or quad state.
Quad state, or whatever that comes after quad, something after that. So, okay, then this number here is something you're going to probably hear at that.
Today I guess all things Russian, right? So this is a Russian folk song.
Huh.